everybody. We're doing something that we don't do very often. Today, it's just me and Becky. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, Sam.
All right. Well, this is a episode of Ask an Atheist, which is only for the internet. It's something we've been planning on doing a little bit more of, and I think the specialness of this week's circumstances sort of calls for it. I don't know.
I think so. I think this is a week where we've got a lot of extra content, and we'd love to be able to get it out there.
Yeah.
We only have an hour available to us on radio.
Actually, this is something that... all right. So we did an episode this week called The Problem of Dogmatic Feminism.
Yes.
And one of the largest critiques that we've gotten, which I'd like to address right now, get it out of the way, right out of the bat, is where he's like, well, you didn't address this problem. You didn't address this problem. You may be listening to Ask an Atheist via a podcast, but Ask an Atheist is primarily a broadcast radio show. Our show is 56 minutes, 50 seconds long. No longer, no shorter. No matter how much content we have, that's how much time we have to fill. We actually jettisoned a lot of our episode in order to let Stephanie Zvon in and on the show and have a conversation with her.
Yeah, so, she called in. She let us know that she had been seeking to call in.
Right.
She let us know that morning.
Yeah. So we got a quick message to her saying, yes, this is when you can call in, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, you know, because she wanted to interact with us, we thought it was important to let her on the show, and that conversation might be more important or more interesting to the community than just our material.
Yeah, than anything else that I had prepared or wanted to speak about initially.
But clearly, people are interested in what the material is. So we're going to take some extra time this week here at Ask an Atheist Studios in Old Town Tacoma, and we're going to go over it a little bit. And well, Becky, how has it been the last 24 hours or so?
Well, it's been a really new experience for me seeing the reactions to both the editorial post that I put up last week on the AskAnAtheist.tv website.
Yeah.
And in response to the recent episode. I'd kind of like to discuss some of the points that that I reject that have been brought up, some points that I want to clarify, some points that I definitely agree with, and some additional thoughts that we didn't get through last week and some responses. But I think one of the things that I wanted to start with is the recognition that the free thought movement is so much larger than what happens on particular blog networks, like free thought blogs or ERV, which has been, those are two different sort of networks and areas of discussion that are popular within the free thought community.
We're not talking about this from some position of media enormity. We're not a big group here.
Certainly not. There are tons of people who this is their first week that they had ever heard of the radio program Ask an Atheist.
Yeah.
And to say that, all atheist-related stuff happens on Ask an Atheist or in commercial radio is certainly, false. But the free thought movement is so much huger than what happens on blogs, what happens on the internet. It's so much of it is what happens in person.
And that's really the context you're trying to speak from when you talk this way, is how this attitude and how the stuff that you're seeing applies to the larger, free thought community context, which is definitely larger than ERV, larger than free thought blogs, orders of magnitude larger than Ask an Atheist.
Yes. And, that seems to be sort of a blind spot for a lot of, it's a blind spot evident in the starting position of some of the bloggers that I'm calling out, essentially. I'm criticizing.
Yeah.
Because I won't walk around it. I'm criticizing a specific thing that many bloggers have done and do.
Okay.
Last year, nearly a year ago now, Rebecca Watson, it was July in 2011, she wrote, every time I mention however delicately a problem issue of misogyny or objectification in our community, the response I get shows me that the problem is much worse than I thought. And the response that she's talking about here is the comments on her blog and the emails that she gets. And I I believe that she gets threatening emails. I believe that she gets disgusting emails. We've seen some that Rebecca herself has published. We've heard from friends. We've heard from other women bloggers. Greta Christina was in our studios, and I know in pre-show she had been talking to us about
disgusting stuff that
people say.
This is not something that we haven't seen ourselves.
No, this is not something that Ask an Atheist hasn't seen.
Yeah, apparently there are people on the internet who find you very nice looking.
One point we were on television, right?
Yeah.
I definitely was the recipient of some of those kinds of emails.
Yeah, and the email was, yeah.
you took more offense to it than I think.
Well, why wouldn't I, right?
Yes. So I think that, but to say, you know, the response that we get shows that the problem is much worse than we initially thought. No, the problem in the internet might be, you know, disgusting or vile.
Sure.
But I don't think that this is representative of a problem of misogyny within the atheist community. So that was, you know, that was July of 2011.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, just yesterday and today.
So what you're suggesting here is that internet, the land that brought you 4chan, might be more the problem than the free thought community itself.
I think parts of the internet, certainly, and I think that there's a lot of crossover.
Okay.
If looking from 2011 to up till now, we had Anne, who we've been engaging with some really nice back and forth on the blog.
Oh, yeah. It was really nice to see her on the blog. I've not read her writing before. I'm not really certain where she's from. It's just enough for me to keep up on the comment thread on Ask an Atheist today.
Yes. And I think by the time this podcast will be released, I'll probably have responded on the blog to some of Anne's concerns.
Right.
But, you know, Anne said, Becky, I think that this thread, meaning the thread that had resulted on Ask an Atheist,
mm-hmm.
This thread is already becoming an excellent example of the way in which the, quote, tone problem you're complaining of at these feminist blogs is more of a universal problem of text-based internet discourse than something that's specific to those bloggers. So, yeah, you've nailed it on the, you know, you've hit the nail on the head right here by saying, yeah, this is a problem of text-based internet discourse. But the thing is that it's not something that's huge and problematic within the atheist community. It's within this particular facet of the atheist community, and as a result of the internet.
In this particular facet of the atheist community, are you specifically speaking of ERV? Because I've got some choice words for them, but
we do. And you know, actually, Ophelia Benson chimed in. She's a prominent feminist blogger and on Free Thought blogs, and she, I believe, is local to the Northwest. And she wrote on our blog, you know, now that you've read a few of the recent comments at ERV, you have a much better understanding of why some of the feminist atheist bloggers you named sometimes ban a commenter who has only asked a question. It's because people who comment regularly at ERV also sock puppet our blogs, and sometimes we can spot them and we ban them. Why? Well, speaking for myself, it's, quote, because of the nature of the discussion at ERV. And yeah, ERV is another sort of web space.
Honest with you, I understood that well enough to begin with. We understood it well enough to begin with. It was something we talked about pretty extensively in the meetings leading up to last week's episode.
Certainly.
That the things that we're seeing is that they're deleting these comments, and, you know, because these are coming from trolls or whatever. Okay, that's fine. They could be coming from trolls. But we also know that these are questions that other people have, like us.
Mm-hmm. Like me, Becky Friedman.
Yeah. These are questions that might deserve answers. And all we're seeing, all because you've deleted the diatribes and the crap, all that's left is this question, and then you say, this guy is banned for asking these questions. Whether or not that's what that means, that's what your intention is, that's what it can look like. And I think that leads to a really negative look at your point. I think it does not make your point. I think it hurts you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it hurts everyone. That's part of the reason why, and I said this on the episode, I didn't know, this should be telling enough. I know who Ophelia is. I know who Rebecca Watson is. I know who Stephanie Zvon is. I know who Greta Christina is, of course. I had no idea who the ERV people are. I'd never run into them before. I'd never read anything of theirs. I hadn't seen their wikis before. But I knew they were out there because otherwise it would literally be just a bunch of people on free thought blogs screaming at nobody.
Well, and I think you also had this inclination that they were out there somewhere because of your familiarity with the internet.
Because I know the internet. Yeah. So I knew I'm I think we did. It's like a pat on the head here, but this played out pretty close to exactly how we thought it would. In that, especially when you posted your introductory post earlier in the week,
mm-hmm.
I knew the first people we're going to hear from was not Almost Diamonds, was not, you know, Ophelia. What's her last name?
Benson.
Thank you. It was not these people. It was going to be the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly what happened. And I thought it was important to have that on my blog as evidence of the problem.
Okay. All right.
That's what it's for. That's why it's there. This will not go on forever.
So, you know, that said, not many people will hang out at ERV. Not many people will hang out in places where, you know, there's a lot of insults going flying around. There's yeah. four different conversations happening within one thread. I happen to find it a little bit difficult to follow.
I can see why. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that kind of online discussion sort of dialectic. I just it's alien to me.
Right.
But the thing is, so the internet or the Freethought community is bigger than what's happening here. But when people enter that part of the community, and we go looking for what the feminist perspective is, what do we see? Well, we see the feminist perspective writing about, and clearly there's a lot of feminist, you know, bloggers that write about amazing things, write about things that are spot on, about feminism, right. about sexism, about atheism. But what do we see as an entry point? We see about feminist perspective writing about the humongous and obvious problem of misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
And all I see is that there is this huge problem and it's obvious. Well, I don't know how obvious it is because all of the stuff has been banned and I don't really know what's going on here. And I see people being called, you know, slimers, and I see people being called...
Yeah, we don't know where their secret ERV hidey hole is.
Yes.
So
well, now we do.
Now we do. Yeah, because we found them. But we don't know where their secret... And that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an assumption here that everybody is familiar with this story.
Everybody's familiar with the story, and everybody is familiar with everything that goes on at Freethought blogs or within the atheist blogosphere. No, right. There's atheists and skeptics coming into, you know, the atheism visibility movement or coming upon the topic at all times.
Yeah.
You know, we work really closely with Rich Lyons and Deanna Lyons at Living After Faith, and that's people who are questioning, who are you know, trying to feel out, is this a community where, you know, where I could, you know, have my thoughts understood, my, you know, dumb questions about what it means to be secular sort of aired and fielded. And, you know, if I were entering from that perspective, I would say, oh my goodness, I ask a question, and if it's a dumb question, I'm going to get banned.
Right.
That's really alienating. I think that it alienates men. It alienates questioners. It makes people afraid to be vocal in terms of their questions, in terms of their skepticism. It makes people, you know, afraid to be friendly when you're trying to engage in real space social interactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a really nice email, or I think maybe it might have been a comment. And it said, Becky and Sam, thank you for doing the show. It's good to hear from someone with a similar opinion to mine in the atheist community. I agree that we need to stomp out sexism in the atheist community, but I'm an introvert and slightly socially awkward guy, and sometimes I feel that if I were to strike up a conversation with someone at a meetup or convention, I could be labeled as the next elevator guy. And we all know that elevator guy means a creepster, someone who is capitalizing on a sexist society in order to put women in a, you know, threatening position.
All right,
that makes them uncomfortable.
So the question is, does this guy deserve to be demonized?
No, I don't think that he deserves to be demonized for any of his questions that he might want to ask, and I don't think that he deserves to be alienated at all.
Does he deserve this sense of I'm not even sure how to describe this feeling, to be honest with you. The sort of emotionality I'm seeing behind this comment. It's fear.
It is fear. It's someone who it would be a natural ally, who is supportive of the atheist community, and support and active in the atheist community, he's an engaged listener,
mm-hmm.
And at this point a commenter.
Yeah.
But this is someone who, you know, is a natural ally that's being alienated.
And there are people, especially in that, like Mary in the comment thread is, oh, we need, you know, why are you protecting the males, and da, da, da. It's
I want to protect this commenter, and I want to welcome this commenter. And to say that, you know, this commenter is part of this category of males just because he is a male and he may benefit from a system of male privilege, I don't think that we are right at all in assigning categorical behavior to a whole class of people. And
well,
in this case, men.
There's an assumption here. There's the assumption here that in order for women to have equal rights, in order for women to not feel harassed, in order for women to have freedom in the community, this guy has to feel fear. There's two ways of looking at it. And the way that is being broadcast on the internet right now, the way I'm reading it, is like there needs to be this equilibrium of discontent. Where there's so much...
Ooh, I like that phrase.
There's discontent in the world, and there's always going to be this amount of discontent. And if we're not going to have it, somebody else needs to have that discontent. I think that's a really dangerous and destructive and zero-sum and negative way of looking at the world. You might not be a humanist.
Well, I am.
Well, you're a human, but we are. And we're looking for... We think the level of discontent in this world can drop.
Yes. I think that that's really insightful. I think that this tit for tat kind of thing that goes on is really destructive and not the ultimate goal of someone who wants to eliminate sexism.
Right.
I think that if you really dig deep, that's not your goal. But I think that if you look closely and critically at one's actions, we can see ourselves engaging in this kind of tit for tat proposed solutions that
right.
either have that sort of that zero sum effect, even if we don't want it.
Right.
And that's what we got to look at. And are the solutions that we're proposing or the actions that we're taking, do they have that effect? And that's really dangerous. And that's not to say I want to preserve the status of the poor demonized white males. No, that's not at all what I'm saying. But here's an example of this. Stephanie Zvon, who of course joined us on you know by calling in last week, you know she had said on one of her posts, those oversensitive lying women, and this is a post by the way that she had recommended to us as one of the educational
posts.
Educational
posts,
right?
Yeah.
She had said, "quote The guys who get the tiniest taste of what women deal with all the time end up being such whiny babies about it. Afraid you won't be believed when it comes to harassment, join the club." I think that's really emblematic of what you're talking about, Sam, with that,
yeah.
you know, maintaining the status quo. If women are to be believed and respected for, you know, for their words, and if men are to understand and sympathize with what women deal with, do they also have to, you know, if they also have to have that kind of taste of it, are we at the point where we're saying, here's a taste of your own medicine?
Right.
I reject that.
Yeah.
And I think that this is really emblematic of the kind of really destructive discourse that's being engaged in. And Stephanie, it's not because you're speaking strongly. It's because of the words you're using.
This is going back to her critique of her appearance on our show, right?
Yes, it is. You know, Stephanie has updated her blog with some reflections on her experience of the phone call that she was in on. You know, and she had said that the dogmatism in the show's title wasn't actually about dogma. It was about my stating things in strong terms, end quote. No, no, no. The show is not about you stating anything strongly. It's about reframing the discussion that's currently going on because it's resulting in more entrenched negative assumptions. It's resulting in, you know, increasing hardlining, in incendiary reactions.
Right.
And the dogma, tone, and social tactics that are being used, that's all part of this current discourse.
Yeah, yeah.
And my argument here is that the discourse itself is destructive. And there has to be at least two interlocutors happening in any discussion.
Sure.
And it's not a question of whether one is bad and the other is worse, right? And it's certainly not a question of, well, you are just as bad as your partner interlocutor.
That's never been what we've been saying. It's... Oh.
I don't want to convey that both sides or sort of both camps with diversity within each camp, you know, recognizing that there is diversity within each camp.
Right.
My contention is not... I don't wish to convey that both sides are equally terrible. No, I'm saying that both sides play a part in this discourse that overall is harmful and resulting in things that I think don't serve our desired end goal.
There's this thing going on that I'm suggesting that that misogyny isn't the problem. And that's just ridiculous. There's no other word for it. It's to put it in a metaphorical context, it's like cancer. We all believe cancer is bad. I don't want to die of cancer. I'm pretty sure Becky doesn't want to die of cancer.
I don't want to die of cancer.
I have not met any cancer fetishists, so...
It's terrible. Oh, my goodness.
But, sorry.
Please.
But we all agree it's a problem. Where we may disagree is an approach on how to deal with cancer. There are some researchers who believe that cancer needs to be edited out of the human genome, like that some genome optimization will make cancer go away. There are other researchers who believe that drugs that selectively target tumorous material will solve the cancer problem, and they fight. And they go on peer-reviewed things. And they, and there are deep academic fights and anger involved in these things.
They use strong terms.
They all agree that cancer is bad. They are all in the fight to end cancer. Where the disagreement is in the means. And that's where this disagreement is. I said it on the show. I've said it before. I'll say it again. We are not saying that there aren't sexists. We're not saying that there aren't atheists who are bad about women. That's not what we're saying.
We've experienced them.
We've experienced it. We, like I said, I grew some in a petri dish on our blog. But there's an assumption in commenters. I don't think any of the major bloggers have gone in this direction so far. Where because we're saying maybe this isn't the best way to do it, and maybe you're being destructive, that suddenly we don't see a problem.
Either suddenly that we don't see a problem, or suddenly we think that everyone currently involved is terrible and bad.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I need to go on about this a little bit. And there was something in the Almost Diamonds post that really got me, is that we talked about education and why education as an alternative to shame.
Yes.
And I said, isn't the idea of these 101 level posts or these educational, of educating people instead of shaming them, isn't that a nice opening move? Or isn't that a nice way to do it? And I said, and I tried to make it inclusive, that I felt that this was a process that Becky would be a part of, that I would be a part of, was sort of going through this educational process with people who might not understand what privilege means, who might not understand why sexism is a problem, why the idea of radical equalist feminism is
radical equity feminist.
Yeah, is kind of a silly concept. And she agreed to a certain extent. She said that she had done some of that and offered a couple posts, but by the time she talks about about it on her blog, it becomes women.
Yeah.
Women need to do this. What they're telling us that women need to do that.
Yeah, it's really. Something that was really baffling to me was that she said, quote, Becky mentioned that it bothered her that women weren't the ones doing the 101 level posts in this discussion, end quote. And I'm really not sure that
it wasn't you. It was me.
Okay.
I mean, you agreed with me and backed me up on it, but that was part of my thing.
I do. Yes, I do agree with that.
But the other thing is, unfortunately, yeah, we need to do this. We need to do this. How many of us out there have to refute Pascal's wager on a daily basis? We are parts of several social movements, most of us. And we're constantly in a phase of education. It's how you raise the floor. Education is how you get people to learn.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to tell me. I'm an educator by trade.
Shame can be a part of education. I'm not saying it's not, and I'm not saying we need to totally jettison it. But shame should be seen, in a larger education context. And as somebody who believes powerfully and believes in the power of these social movements, yeah, education, even on the basic stuff, is going to be something that we're going to have to do on a continual basis. It's not something I'm saying you need to do. I'm saying it's something
we as activists, as public atheists,
I have to do. I'm already doing it every day. I'm commenting on the weather.
Now, I have a lot of experience working with multicultural education and groups that experience minority status. And there's a real sort of initial front that says, oh, there is a black person in our midst. Please tell us about what it is like to be black, and how that's really an unfair position to put an African-American person in. Is it unfair to say, oh, there's an atheist in our midst? atheist. Please educate us about what it is like to be an atheist. Well, first of all, we, as a show, we're called Ask an Atheist, and we welcome any questions on that very particular thing. We ourselves put ourselves out there and gladly take on that helm. Does every atheist have to do that? No, but I think that if you're an atheist blogger or an atheist activist, that's kind of the role that you're embracing.
Yeah. And I'm volunteering to do this for the feminism stuff, too. I'm not saying I'm not just doing this for atheism.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do this for anything I strongly believe in.
Well, back to our commenter, Anne. She had suggested in a really positive manner that, an FAQ really would be helpful. And I think that would be nice to sort of give the rundown, give sort of examples, things like that. And I'm happy to, publish some of the notes and the links that I have used in formulating this kind of thing,
this
talk and this discussion and this perspective on the discussion. If someone wants to take on the task of collaboratively creating an FAQ on this particular issue.
So you're also volunteering?
Yes. Yes.
There you go.
In a collaborative way. Well, I don't think that I can take on the whole thing myself.
No. When I said I'm volunteering is if anybody has said something stupid out there, I'll raise my hand and speak up.
Right.
But I am also the technical producer for this show, so I'm pretty heavily booked.
Right.
I have to admit.
The other thing is that, Stephanie had followed up with that, saying that, yes, she had done some of those sort of 101 level posts. But the idea that women or particular women have to host 101 level discussions this far into our year plus long discussion is problematic. That's end quote. And the thing is that I never said stay at intro level stuff. I never said stay there. I'm saying make your heavy stuff, make your heady stuff, make your sophisticated stuff accessible as an entry point. Because again, we have atheists, we have observers coming in at any point.
That's it. It's just saying this year-long discussion. If somebody joins the atheist community tomorrow, they're going to know nothing about this year-long discussion.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need to go through the back material. This back material needs to be available, and it needs to be easy to get to if you're expecting people to be conversant on it. I mean, we have a job here to convince people of things.
Yeah, and it's not difficult to make even sophisticated stuff acceptable or accessible as an entry point.
Right.
I do a lot in my educational work of scaffolding really complex material. I've done ELL, English Language Learner, education for high school. You're talking geometry, making geometry and algebra 2 accessible to someone who doesn't know English at all, right?
Okay.
You can do it. It can be done. Maybe Stephanie accesses it more from the perspective of a writer. I'm reminded, she's a fiction and fantasy writer. I'm reminded of a really popular book series where each book gets increasingly more sophisticated, longer, more complex, but each book provides its own entry point.
Yeah.
Any idea what I'm talking about, Sam?
Actually, I don't.
Okay, well, that's because you haven't read them. But the Harry Potter series, really? Really?
Yeah, not really my bad.
It provides that thing. You don't have to have read the first two Harry Potter books in order to pick up Prisoner of Azkaban and start reading.
All right.
There's sort of a crash course in it, and you see, and then you're able to engage with the characters, relate to what's going on, have opinions, empathize, a discussion about a social movement and phenomenon is not the same thing as a 13-year-old wizard boy, for sure.
Right.
But it's through that kind of technique that you can provide that entry point to someone joining the discussion and joining the conversation.
Okay.
And so, Stephanie Zvon, do I think that it's your responsibility to do that? No, that would be problematic. But do I think that it's problematic that... that we don't have an entry point into that year-long discussion? Yeah, I think it is.
I might suggest something a little different, and this will likely get me in trouble, but does Stephanie have a responsibility in as much as she has chosen to be a social activist? I think so, because that's...
Same as you and me?
That's the job of being a social activist. That's the job that I have decided to do in the cause of atheism and humanism and skepticism and free thought on Ask an Atheist. It's a voluntary responsibility. Once I stop doing the show, it's a responsibility I put away.
Part of the thing that really puzzled me about Stephanie's interaction with the phone call with us was saying, you're referencing something that was specific to a particular person.
Right.
Well, as a blogger, you're like a newspaper, columnist. Presumably anyone can access your writing and it's for all kinds of audiences.
Right.
how do I wade through what's, you know, what's a specific thing and what's, you know, what's referencing a specific person?
Sure.
If I'm the, you know, if I'm the reader and you're writing with the second person you, I'm going to put myself in that position.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll keep talking. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997.